So Janmashtami is coming up in
about 2 days. Well, today's Tuesday, so it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, about 3 days. Janmashtami is coming up, and in honor of Janmashtami, we're going to chant Sri Vraja Dhamma Mahayu Amrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, which is always known as Jaya Radhe, Jaya Krishna, Jaya Vrindavana. Okay. Jayarande, Jaya Krishna, Jaya Vrindavan. Shri Govinda Gopinatha Matana
Kanyagan Rasa Manu Kala Jaya Jaya Radha Chandra. Jaya Jaya Rasa Lila Gosara Manra. Parvatiya Bhavaya Prachate Prachara Shri Janava Padma Padma Koryat Smara Krishna Tatsa Goe Nama Sankirtana Jaya Radhe Jaya Krishna Jaya
This divine grace of Ayacharana Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Kijai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijai Nandakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Kijai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kijai Premse Gaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sidwaita Ganadhar Srila Sri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Kijai Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gopi Gopinath Saim Kund Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavanam Ki Jai Maturam Ki Jai Jagannatha Swami Ki Jai Yamunabai Ki Jai Srimati Lasa Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Govar Premananda Hanipo. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Dinamani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharni Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarini. So, let's read the translation. All glories to Radha Krishna and the divine forest of Vrindavan. All glories to the three presiding deities of Vrindavan, Sri Govinda, Gopinath, and Madan Mohan. All glories to Shyamakun, Radhakun, Govardhan Hill, and the Yamuna River, Kalindi. All glories to the great forest known as Mahavana. All glories to Keshigat, the Vamsivat tree, and the 12th forest of Braja. At these places, the son of Nanda, Sri Krishna, performed all of his pastimes. All glories to Krishna's divine father and mother, Nandini and Yashoda. All glories to the coward boys headed by Sri Rama. All glories to the cows and calves of Braja. All glories to Radha's divine father and mother, Vrishabhanu, and the beautiful Kirtida. All glories to Purnamasi, the mother of Sandeep, Pani Muni. All glories to the young coward maidens of Braja. All glories to Gopishra Shiva, who resides in Vrindavan in order to protect the holy Dham. All glories to Krishna's funny Brahmin friend, Madhu Mango. All glories to Ramagat, where Lord Balaram performed his rasa dance. All glories to Lord Balaram, the son of Rohini. All glories to all the residents of Vrindavan. All glories to the wives of the proud Vedic Brahmins. All glories to the wives of the Kaliya serpent. Through pure devotion, they all obtain the lotus feet of Lord Govinda. All glories to the place where the rasa dance of Sri Krishna was performed. All glories to Radha and Shama. All glories to the divine rasa dance, which is the most beautiful of all Lord Krishna's pastimes. All glories to the mallow of conjugal love, which is the most excellent of all rasas, and is propagated in Braja by Sri Krishna in the form of the divine Bharatiya Bhava. Remembering the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda's consort Sri Janava Devi, this very fallen and lowly servant of Krishna sings the Sankirtan of the holy name. Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami Ki Jai. So Om Gana Timidandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, now we are continuing with our reading of Prabhupada's Krishna book. And as we're reading Prabhupada's Krishna book, I'll be making a few comments. And we're on chapter 4, which deals with demons and Kamsa sending people to kill Krishna. Okay, this is very interesting. So let's share the screen. Oops. Let me just go to the share button here. Share the screen with all of you. And then we can continue with chapter 4. And chapter 4 is entitled Kamsa Begins His Persecutions. And remember, Kamsa in his last life, he was Kalanami. He was killed by Vishnu. And he's all worried about getting killed by Vishnu again, and he's thinking of Vishnu 24 hours a day, much more than any of us are thinking of Krishna. Because he's thinking of Vishnu in fear, animosity, and these emotions are very, very strong. Okay. So after Vasudeva had adjusted things as they had been before he carried Krishna to Gokula, and all the doors and gates became similarly closed, the gatekeepers awoke, and heard the newborn child crying. Kamsa was waiting to hear the news of the child's birth, and the gatekeepers immediately approached him and informed him that the child was born. At that time, Kamsa got up from his bed very quickly and exclaimed, "Now the cruel death of my life is born." Kamsa became perplexed now that his death was approaching, and his hair scattered. Immediately proceeded toward the place where the child was born. Devaki, on seeing her brother approaching, prayed in a very meek attitude to Kamsa, "My dear brother, please do not kill this female child. I promise that this child will be the wife of your son. Therefore, don't kill her. You are not to be killed by any female child." That was the prophecy. You were to be killed by a male child, so please do not kill her. My dear brother, you have killed so many of my children who were just born, shining like the sun. That is not your fault. You have been advised by demoniac friends to kill my children. Now I beg you to excuse this girl. At least let her live as my daughter. Kongsu was so cruel. Let me turn my phone off so I'm not hearing messages every few seconds. Okay. Kongsu was so cruel that he did not listen to the pitiful prayers of his sister Devaki. He forcibly grabbed the newborn child to rebuke his sister and attempted to dash her on the stone mercilessly. This is a graphic example of a cruel demon who could sacrifice all relationships for the sake of personal gratification. But the child immediately slipped out of his hands as he was raising her to smash her against the wall, and went up into the sky and appeared with eight arms as the younger sister of Vishnu. And of course, that's a Yoga Maya. She was decorated with nice garments and flower garlands and ornaments, and in her eight hands she held a bow, lance, arrows, sword, conch shell, disc, club, and shield. And actually, okay, Prabhupada says, seeing the appearance of the child was actually the goddess Durga. So Durga is an expansion of Yoga Maya. However, for demons like Kamsa, even if they approach Lakshmi, they get Maya Lakshmi or Durga. So this is a question of what? Yayatamam Prabhajantate Tam Sataiva Bhajamiyam. All the demigods from different planets like Siddhaloka, Charanaloka, Gandharvaloka, Apsaraloka, Kanaraloka, and Uragaloka presented her with various articles and began to offer their respective prayers. From above, the goddess addressed Kongsa. You rascal, how can you kill me? The child who will kill you is already born before me somewhere within this world. Don't be so cruel to your poor sister. After this appearance, the goddess Durga became known by various names in various parts of the world. After hearing these words, Kamsa became very much overwhelmed with fear. Out of pity, he immediately released Vasudeva and Devaki from the bondage of their shackles and very politely began to address them. He said, my dear sister and brother-in-law, I have acted just like a demon in killing my own nephews, your children, and thereby I have given up all consideration of our intimate relationship. I do not know what will be the result of these envious acts of mine. Probably I shall be sent to the hell where killers of Brahmins go. I am surprised, however, that the celestial prophecy has not come true. It is not only in human society that false propaganda is found. Now it appears that even the celestial denizens speak lies. Because I believed in the words of the celestial denizens, I have committed so many sins by killing the children of my sister. My dear Vasudeva and Devaki, you are both very great souls. I have no instructions to give you, but still I request you not to be sorry for the death of your children. He understands some philosophy here. It's interesting. Every one of us is under the control of superior power, and that superior power does not allow us to remain together. We are bound to be separated from our friends and relatives in due course of time. But we must know for certain that even after the disappearance of the different material bodies, the soul remains intact eternally. For example, there are many pots made of earthly clay, and they are prepared and also broken. But in spite of this, the earth remains as it is perpetually. Similarly, the bodies of the soul under different conditions are made and destroyed, but the spirit soul remains eternally. So there's nothing to lament over. Everyone should understand that this material body is different from the spirit soul, and so long as one does not come to that understanding, he is sure to accept the process of transmigration from one body to another. Now, Kamsa, he wanted to use this philosophy to pacify Devaki and Vasudev, but he didn't apply it to himself. Had he applied it to himself, he wouldn't have killed the kids. He would have understood the eternality of his soul, the law of karma, and he would have been real scared. But he's using the philosophy without completely believing it. My dear sister, Devaki, you are so gentle and kind. Please excuse me. Don't be aggrieved by the death of your children, which I have caused. Actually, this was not done by me because all these are predestined activities. In one sense, he's right, but still he has to be responsible. That's an interesting question. I mean, sometimes someone kills someone else, and you can just say, that was your karma. You were going to die anyway because you were supposed to die. You're supposed to be killed at that particular juncture. However, yes and no. It was the person's karma, yes. However, you decided to be the agent of the person's karma and acted irreligiously. So you're responsible. So Krishna puts together people who are acting irresponsibly and people who have some karmic reaction. So it's not that it's just your karma. You know, I hurt you. Yeah, it was your karma. You have to suffer. Krishna wanted me to do it. The devil made me do it. You know, this is basically what he's saying here. Actually, it was not done by me. One has to act according. You know, it's almost appears to be Krishna conscious philosophy. You're not the doer. One has to act according to the predestined plan, even unwillingly. I was forced by destiny. People misunderstand that with the end of the body, the self dies, and they think that one can kill another living entity. All these misconceptions oblige one to accept the conditions of material existence. In other words, as long as one is not firmly convinced of the eternality of the soul, one is subjected to the tribulation of being the killer and killed. My dear sister Devaki and brother-in-law Vasudev, kindly excuse the atrocities I have committed against you. I am very poor-hearted, and you are so great-hearted. So take compassion upon me and excuse me. So here's a word about karma. Definitely. While Kamsa was speaking, it's not that he was soft-hearted. While Kamsa was speaking to his brother-in-law and sister, tears flowed from his eyes and he fell down at their feet. Believing the words of Durga Devi, whom he had tried to kill, Kamsa immediately released his brother-in-law and sister. He personally unlocked the iron shackles and very sympathetically showed his friendship for his family members. When Devaki saw her brother so repentant, she also became pacified and forgot all of his atrocious activities against her children. That's a little soft-hearted. Vasudev, also forgetting all the past incidents, spoke smilingly with his brother-in-law. Vasudev told Kamsa, "My dear fortunate brother-in-law, what you were saying about the material body and the soul is correct. Every living entity is born ignorant, misunderstanding this material body to be a self. This conception of life is due to ignorance. And on the basis of this ignorance, we create enmity or friendship, lamentation, jubilation, fearfulness, envy, greed. Illusion and madness are different features of our material concept of life. A person influenced like this engages in enmity only due to the material body. Being engaged in such activities, we forget our eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Vasudev took the opportunity of Kamsa's benevolence and informed him that his atheistic activities were also due to this misconception of life, namely taking the material body to be the self. When Vasudev talked with Kamsa in such an illuminating way, Kamsa became very much pleased and his guilt for killing his nephew subsided. With the permission of his sister Devaki and brother-in-law Vasudev, he returned to his home with a relieved mind, but not so relieved. And not so repentant. he forgot the philosophy the next day. By the next day, Kamsa called all his counselors together and narrated to them all the incidents that had happened the night before. All the counselors of Kamsa were demons and eternal enemies of the demigods, so they became depressed upon hearing their master speak of the night's events. And although they were not very much experienced or learned, they began to give instructions to Kamsa as follows. "Dear sir, let us now make arrangements to kill all children who are born within the last 10 days in all towns, countries, counties, villages, and pasturing grounds. Let us execute this plan indiscriminately. We think that the demigods cannot do anything against us if we perform these atrocities. They are always afraid of fighting with us, and even if they wish to check our activities, they will not dare to do so. Because of your immeasurable strength, they fear your bow. Indeed, we have practical experience that whenever you stood to fight with them and began to shower your arrows in them, they immediately fled in all directions just to save their lives. Many of the demigods were unable to fight with you, and they immediately surrendered themselves unto you by loosening their turbans and tufts of hair on their heads, like flying the white flag. With folded hands, they begged you to spare them and said, "My lord, we are all afraid of your strength. Please release us from this dangerous fight." We have also seen many times that you would never kill such surrendered fighters when they were all fearful, their bows, arrows, and chariots broken, forgetful of their material activities, and unable to fight with you. So actually, we have nothing to fear from these demigods. They are very proud of being great fighters in peacetime outside the war field, but actually they cannot show any talent or military power on the war field. Although Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, and Lord Brahma are always ready to help the demigods headed by Indra, we have no reason to be afraid of them. As far as Lord Vishnu is concerned, he has already hidden himself within the hearts of all living entities, and he can't come out. They don't understand he can be in everyone's heart and everywhere else simultaneously. As far as Lord Shiva is concerned, he has renounced all activities. He has already entered into the forest. And Lord Brahma is always engaged in different types of austerities and meditation. And what to speak of Indra? He is a straw in comparison to your strength. Therefore, we have nothing to fear from any of these demigods. But we must not neglect them, for the demigods are our determined enemies. We must be careful to protect ourselves. To root them out from their very existence, we should just engage ourselves in your service and be always ready for your command. The demons continue to say, if there is some disease in the body which is neglected, it worsens and becomes incurable. Similarly, when one is not careful about restraining the senses and lets them loose, it is then very difficult to control them. Therefore, we must now be very careful of the demigods before they get too strong to be subdued. The foundation of the strength of the demigods is Lord Vishnu, because the ultimate goal of all religious principles is to satisfy him. The Vedic injunctions, Brahmanas, the cows, austerity, sacrifice, performances of charity, and distribution of wealth are all for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. So let us immediately begin by killing all the Brahmanas who are in charge of the Vedic knowledge, along with the great sages who are in charge of sacrificial performances. Let us kill all the cows, which are the source of butter, which is so necessary for performing sacrifices. Please give us your permission to kill all these creatures. Whew! What demons? Now remember, these are interplanetary demons who had fought with Vishnu and the demigods in other places, and now they had taken shelter on Earth in Kshatriya families. Actually, the limbs of the transcendental body of Lord Vishnu, the Brahmins, the cows, Vedic knowledge, austerity, truthfulness, sense of mind control, faithfulness, charity, tolerance, and performance sacrifices. Lord Vishnu is situated in everyone's heart and is the leader of all demigods, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. Therefore, we think that to persecute the great sages and Brahmanas is to kill Lord Vishnu. They think Lord Vishnu is dependent upon the sages and Brahmanas. But he's Swarat. Swarat means he's independent, he's optikamic, can fulfill his own desires. And aham adirhi devanam. He's the source of all the demigods and sages. Also aham sarvasya pravam adaksarvam pavartite iti makvah bhavshantimam buddhabhava samanvata. I am the source of everything, Krishna says in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, verse 8. It's the first of the nutshell verses. Everything comes from me. And also, what? Om Purnamada, Purnamidam. Yeah. The Supreme Personality of God is perfect and complete. So many complete, perfect units come from him. Thus, being advised by his demonic ministers, Kamsa, who was from the very beginning the greatest rascal, decided to persecute the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, being trapped by the shackle of all devouring eternal time. He ordered the demons to harass all kinds of saintly persons, and then he entered his house. The adherents of Kamsa were all influenced by the mode of passion as well as illusion by the mode of ignorance, you know, mixture. It was just ignorance, they just go to sleep. And if it was passion, they would actually consider their future. So it had to be a mixture of passion and ignorance. And their only business was to create enmity with saintly persons. Such activities can only reduce one's duration of life. The demons accelerated the process and invited their deaths as soon as possible. The result of persecuting saintly persons is not only untimely death, this act is so offensive that the perpetrator also gradually loses his beauty, his fame, and his religious principles, and thus his promotion to higher planets is checked. Driven by various kinds of mental concoctions, the demons diminish all kinds of auspiciousness, and offense at the lotus feet of the devotees and brahmanas is a greater offense than that committed at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A civilization that commits such sinful activities gradually loses all faith in the Supreme Lord, and such a godless civilization becomes the source of all calamities in human society. And that's what we're experiencing now, too. So thus end the Bhaktivedanta purport of the fourth chapter of Krishna. Kamsa begins his persecutions. All right. No demons yet. I mean, yeah, we've read about the demons, but can't wait till we get to Putana. She's a wonderful demoness. So chapter 5 is entitled The Meeting of Nanda and Vasudeva. Although Krishna was the real son of Vasudeva and Devaki, because of Kamsa's atrocious activities, Vasudeva could not enjoy the birth ceremony of his son. But Nanda Maharaj, the foster father, celebrated the birth ceremony of Krishna very joyfully. The next day, it was declared that a male child had been born to Yashoda. According to Vedic custom, Nanda Maharaj called for learned astrologers and brahmanas to perform the birth ceremony. After the birth of a child, the astrologers calculate the moment of the birth and make a horoscope of the child's future life. Another ceremony takes place after the birth of a child. The family members take baths, cleanse themselves, and decorate themselves with ornaments and nice garments. Then they come before the child and the astrologer to hear of the future life of the child. Nanda Maharaj and other members of the family dressed and sat down in front of the birthplace. All the brahmanas were assembled there on this occasion, chanted auspicious mantras according to the rituals, while the astrologers performed the birth ceremony. All the demigods are worshipped on this occasion, as well as the forefathers of the family. Nanda Maharaj distributed to the brahmanas 200,000 cows, a lot of cows, which were well decorated with cloth and ornaments. He gave the brahmanas not only cows in charity, but also hills of grain decorated with ornaments and golden bordered cloth. In the material world, we possess riches and wealth in many ways, but sometimes not in very honest and pious ways, because that is the nature of accumulating wealth. According to the Vedic injunction, therefore, one should purify such wealth by giving cows and gold in charity to the brahmanas. A newborn child is also purified by gifts of grain and charity to the brahmanas. In this material world, it is to be understood that we are always living in a contaminated state. We therefore have to purify the duration of our lives, our possession of wealth, and ourself. We can purify our duration of life by taking daily bath and cleansing the body inside and outside and accepting the 10 kinds of purificatory processes. By austerities, by worship of the Lord, and by distribution of charity, we can purify the possession of wealth. We can purify ourselves by studying the Vedas in order to understand the absolute truth and to achieve self-realization. It is therefore stated in the Vedic literature that by birth everyone is born a Shudra, that's Janmana Jayate Shudra, and that by accepting the purificatory process one becomes twice born, that is, by studying the Vedas one becomes a Vipra, which is the preliminary qualification for becoming a Brahmin. Vipra means a learned person. And that when one perfectly understands the absolute truth, he is called a Brahmin. And when the Brahmin reaches further perfection, he becomes a Vaishnava or a devotee. And actually, you could immediately go to the platform of devotional service. There's that wonderful verse, I hope about the Swab, Pachatao, Garyan Yadivagre Vartate Namatupyam, Tepustapus Jehuva Sharsna Aryar, Brahmanuchar Nama Grananti Yate. And what does that verse say? It says how wonderful it is if someone is chanting the Lord's holy names. Even if he was born in a dog-eating family, he automatically is known to have performed all the Vedic rituals and come to this platform of being a Brahmana. So the real meaning of the word Brahman is one who understands Brahman. In Krishna's birth ceremony, all the assembled Brahmins began to chant different kinds of Vedic mantras to invoke all good fortune for the child. There are different kinds of chanting known as Sutta, Magadha, Vandija, and Virudhavali. Along with this chanting of mantras and songs, bugles and kettle drums are sounded outside the house. On this occasion, the joyous vibrations could be heard in all the pasturing grounds and all the houses. Within and outside the house, there were varieties of artistic paintings done with rice pulp and scented water were sprinkled everywhere, even on the roads and streets. Ceilings and roofs were decorated with different kinds of flags, festoons, and green leaves. The gates were made of green leaves and flowers. All the cows, bulls, and calves were smeared with a mixture of oil and turmeric and painted with minerals like red oxide, yellow clay, and manganese. They wore garlands of peacock feathers and were covered with nice colored cloths and gold necklaces. When all the ecstatic coward men heard that Nanda Maharaj, the father of Krishna, was celebrating the birth ceremony of his son, they became spontaneously joyful. They dressed themselves with very costly garments and ornamented their bodies with different kinds of earrings, necklaces, and wore great turbans on their heads. After dressing themselves in this gorgeous way, they took various kinds of presentations and thus approached the house of Nanda Maharaj. As soon as they heard that Mother Yashoda had given birth to a child, all the coward women all became overwhelmed with joy, and they also dressed themselves with various kinds of costly garments and ornaments and smeared scented cosmetics on their body, on their bodies. As the dust on the lotus flower exhibits the exquisite beauty of the flower, all the gopis, coward women, applied the dust of kumkuma on their lotus-like faces. These beautiful gopis took their different presentations and very soon reached the house of Maharaj Nanda. Overburdened with heavy hips and swollen breasts, the gopis could not proceed very quickly toward the house of Nanda Maharaj, but out of ecstatic love for Krishna, they proceeded as quickly as possible. Their ears were decorated with pearl rings, their necks with jewel lockets, their lips with different kinds of lipstick, their eyes with various kinds of ointment, like cudgel, and their hands with nice golden bangles. As they were very hastily passing over the stone road, the flower garlands which were decorating their bodies fell to the ground, and it appeared that a shower of flowers was falling from the sky. From the movement of the different kinds of ornaments on their bodies, they were looking still more beautiful. In this way, they all reached the house of Nanda Yashoda and blessed the child. "Dear child, you live long just to protect us." While they were blessing child Krishna in this way, they offered a mixture of turmeric powder, oil, yogurt, milk, and water. They sprinkled the mixture not only on the body of child Krishna, but on all other persons who were present there. Also on that auspicious occasion, there were different bands of expert musicians playing. A big festival. When the coward men saw the pastimes of the coward women, they became very joyful, and in response, they also began to throw yogurt, milk, clarified butter, and water upon the bodies of the gopis. Gopis, these were the elderly coward ladies. The word gopi means female who is a member of the Vaishya or coward keeping caste. Then both parties began to throw butter on each other's bodies. Nanda Maharaj was also very happy to see the pastimes of the coward men and women, and he became very liberal in giving charity to the different singers who were assembled there. Some singers were reciting great verses from the Upanishads and Puranas, some were glorifying the family ancestors, and some were singing very sweet songs. There were also many learned brahmanas present, and Nanda Maharaj, being very satisfied on this occasion, gave them different kinds of garments, ornaments, and cows in charity. It is very important to note in this connection how wealthy the inhabitants of Vrindavan were simply by raising cows. All the coward men belonged to the Vaishya community, and their business was to protect the cows and cultivate crops. By their dress and ornaments, and by their behavior, it appeared that although they were in a small village, they were still very rich with material possessions. They possessed such an abundance of various kinds of milk products that they were throwing butter lavishly on each other's bodies without restriction. Their wealth was in milk, yogurt, clarified butter, and many other milk products, and by trading their agricultural products, they were rich in various kinds of jewelry, ornaments, and costly garments. Not only did they possess all these things, but they could give them away in charity lavishly, as did Nanda Maharaj. Thus, Nanda Maharaj, the foster father of Lord Krishna, began to satisfy the desires of all the men assembled there. He respectfully received them and gave them in charity whatever they desired. The learned Brahmanas, who had no other source of income, were completely dependent on the Vaishya community for their maintenance, and they received gifts on such festive occasions as birthdays and marriages. While Nanda Maharaj was worshipping Lord Vishnu on this occasion and was trying to satisfy all the people there, his only desire was that the newborn child Krishna would be happy. Nanda Maharaj had no knowledge that this child was the origin of Vishnu. He was praying to Lord Vishnu to protect him. Of course, this contrasts with the knowledge that Vasudeva and Devaki had. They knew their child was Lord Vishnu. Why did they know? Because before he appeared in the normal human form, he appeared with four arms and was pacifying them. Rohini Devi, the mother of Balaram, was the most fortunate wife of Vasudeva. She was away from her husband, yet just to congratulate Maharaj Nanda on the occasion of the birth ceremony of his son Krishna, she dressed herself very nicely. Wearing a garland, a necklace, and other bodily ornaments, she appeared on the scene and moved hither and thither. According to the Vedic system, a woman whose husband is not at home does not dress herself very nicely. But although Rohini's husband was away, she still dressed herself very nicely on this occasion. From the opulence of the birth ceremony of Krishna, it is very clear that at that time Vrindavan was rich in every respect. Because Lord Krishna took birth in the house of King Nanda and Mother Yashoda, the goddess of fortune was obliged to manifest her opulences in Vrindavan. It appeared that Vrindavan had already become a site for the pastimes of the goddess of fortune. After the birth ceremony, Nanda Maharaj decided to go to Mathura to pay the annual tax to the government of Kamsa. Before leaving, he called for the able coward men of the village and asked them to take care of Vrindavan in his absence. When Nanda Maharaj arrived in Mathura, Vasudeva got the news and was very eager to congratulate his friend. He immediately went to the place where Nanda Maharaj was staying. They're half-brothers, remember. When Nanda saw Vasudeva, he felt that he had regained his life. Nanda, overwhelmed with joy, immediately stood up and embraced Vasudeva. Vasudeva was received very warmly and offered a nice place to sit. Anxious about his two sons, who had been put under the protection of Nanda without Nanda's knowledge, that's Krishna Balaram, Vasudeva inquired about them with great anxiety. Both Balaram and Krishna were the sons of Vasudeva. Balaram was transferred to the womb of Rohini, Vasudeva's own wife, but Rohini was kept under the protection of Nanda Maharaj. Krishna was personally delivered to Yashoda and exchanged with her daughter. Nanda Maharaj knew that Balaram was the son of Vasudeva, but he did not know that Krishna was also Vasudeva's son. Vasudeva, of course, was aware of this fact and inquired very eagerly about both Krishna and Balaram. Vasudeva then addressed Nanda, "My dear brother, you were old and very anxious to beget a son, yet you had none. Now, by the grace of the Lord, you are fortunate to have a very nice son. I think that this incident is very auspicious for you. Dear friend, I was imprisoned by Kamsa, and now I am released. Therefore, this is another birth for me. I had no hope of seeing you again, but by God's grace, I can see you." In this way, Vasudeva indirectly expressed his anxiety about Krishna. Krishna was sent incognito, that means hidden, to the bed of Mother Yashoda, and after Nanda very pompously celebrated Krishna's birth ceremony, he went to Mathura. So Vasudeva was very much pleased and said, "This is a new birth for me." He never expected that Krishna would live, because all his other sons had been killed by Kamsa. Vasudeva continued, "My dear friend, it is very difficult for us to live together. Although we have family and relatives, sons and daughters, by nature's way, we are generally separated from one another. The reason for this is that every living entity appears on this earth under different pressures of fruitive activities. Although they assemble together, there is no certainty of their remaining together for a long time." And it, you know, we've experienced that with the passing of relatives, the passing of dear friends, that you know, you're with someone and then you don't see them again. Gone. Of course, some religions state that, you know, when you go back to the spiritual world, your mother and father are there, and they pretty much look like your mother and father did in this world, but that is not actually true. These temporary designations, this body that we have, is not indicate or does not indicate any eternal situation. According to one's fruitive activities, one has to act differently and they're separated. For example, many plants and creepers are floating in the waves of the ocean. Sometimes they come together and sometimes they separate forever. One plant goes one way, another plant goes another. Similarly, our family assembly may be very nice while we are living together, but after some time, in due course, in the course of the waves of time, we are separated. Very true. The purport of this expression by Vasudeva is this: although he had 8 sons born from the womb of Devaki, unfortunately, they were all gone. He could not even keep his one son, Krishna, with him. Vasudeva was feeling his separation, but he could not express the real fact. "Please tell me about the welfare of Vrindavan," he said. "You have many animals. Are they happy? Are they getting sufficient grass and water? Please also let me know whether the place where you are now living is undisturbed and peaceful." This inquiry was made by Vasudeva because he was very anxious about Krishna's safety. He knew that Kamsa and his followers were trying to kill Krishna by sending various kinds of demons. They had already resolved that all children born within 10 days of the birthday of Krishna should be killed. Because Vasudeva was so anxious about Krishna, he inquired about the safety of his residence. He also inquired about Balaram and his mother Rohini, who were entrusted to take care of Nanda Maharaj, Vasudeva also reminded Nanda Maharaj that Balaram did not know his real father. "He knows you as his father, and now you have another child, Krishna. I think you are taking very nice care of both of them." It is also significant that Vasudeva inquired about the welfare of Nanda Maharaj's animals. The animals, especially the cows, were protected exactly in the manner of one's children. Vasudeva was a Kshatriya and Nanda Maharaj was a Vaishya. It is the duty of the Kshatriyas to give protection to the citizens, and it is the duty of the Vaishyas to give protection to the cows. The cows are as important as the citizens. Very important point. Just as the human citizens should be given all kinds of protection, so the cows also should be given full protection. Vasudeva continued to say that the maintenance of religious principles, economic development, and the satisfactory execution of meeting the demands of the senses depend on cooperation among relatives, nations, and all humanity. Therefore, it is everyone's duty to see that his fellow citizens and the cows are not put into difficulty. One should see to the peace and comfort of his fellow man and the animals. The development of religious principles, economic development, and sense gratification can then be achieved without difficulty. Vasudeva expressed his sorrow due to not being able to give protection to his own sons born of Devaki. He was thinking that religious principles, economic development, and the satisfaction of his senses were therefore lost. Upon hearing this, Nanda Maharaj replied, "My dear Vasudeva, I know that you are very much aggrieved because the cruel king Kamsa had killed all your sons born of Devaki. Although the last child was a daughter, Kamsa could not kill her, and she has entered into the celestial planets. My dear friend, do not be aggrieved. We are all being controlled by our past deeds, and one who is conversant with the philosophy of karma and its reactions is a man in knowledge. Such a person will not be aggrieved at any incident, happy or miserable." Vasudeva then replied, "My dear Nanda, if you have already paid the government taxes, then return soon to your place, because I think that there may be some disturbances in Gokula." After the friendly conversation between Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva, Vasudeva returned to his home. Nanda Maharaj and the other coward men who had come to Mathura to pay their taxes also returned home. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 5th chapter of Krishna, the meeting of Nanda and Vasudeva. So today we read chapter 4 and 5. And I just can't wait to get to the demons. And that's the next chapter, deals with Putana. And Putana is a very interesting background story of Putana, which I'm not going to tell today. So we're going through the Krishna book. There's 90 chapters in the whole Krishna book. And these chapters dealing with Krishna's activities in Vrindavan are the most relishable chapters. And we're just starting now. Okay, so we'll stop sharing and we'll allow you to unmute yourselves and you can ask questions, as we normally say, by raising your hand, typing in the text window, or being so bold as to unmute yourself. So, who has a question? Question. Oh, Jagat. What's your question?
How could Nanda be so relaxed if there was an edict to kill all the children born within 10 days?
Maybe he didn't know about that edict at that point. I mean, maybe... And Vasudeva doesn't appear that Vasudeva actually told Nanda Maharaj about it. He warned him. And it's interesting, Vasudeva probably knew about it. So why didn't he tell Nanda Maharaj? Probably because he was being spied on somehow or other. But somehow or other, Nanda Maharaj didn't know about it. And later on, when the demons start appearing, particularly Putana, Nanda Maharaj starts thinking, you know, hey, Vasudeva was really prophetic, you know. So obviously he didn't know about it, because he had attributed Vasudeva's warning to Vasudeva's prophetic ability. So obviously he hadn't been informed. And maybe Vasudeva hadn't been informed either, but I assume Vasudeva had been informed. I mean, sometimes when there's spies all around, you got to be really careful how you warn someone. Just like when Vidura was warning the Pandavas about the house of Lak in Varnavat, he actually spoke in, let's say, in a metaphorical way. He didn't say directly, hey, there's going to be a fire in your house, these guys, because he was being observed. So he had to, essentially, he spoke in the language of the Malechas or something like that, some statement like that in the Bhagavatam. It's probably English or something. So he spoke in the language of the Malechas, and he spoke in just a very indirect way. And Yudhisthira, being very intelligent, was able to understand the hint. And then, of course, Vidura later sent a miner. Miner means someone who digs up the ground and excavates mines to dig the tunnel so the Pandavas could escape the house of Lak. So, yeah. So sometimes you can't really tell people things. You got to hint. I mean, perhaps he didn't want... Anyway, I'm not going to guess, but seriously, I know that Nanda didn't know about Kansa's plan at that point, because he attributed everything to Vasudeva's prophetic ability. Okay, good question. And Mr. Gopal.
Please accept my obeisances, Shri Gurudev.
Yes.
Poor King Kamsa, you know, he on several occasions showed that he wanted to do the right thing, but then Narada Muni comes along and pokes the bear, and then his ministers come and poke him again. And originally the demigods up in the sky with their prophecy are poking him, poking him, poking him. So why is he considered to be so heinous and responsible for all these things if, you know, he was going along just living his life and then people come along and poke him? And he's just defending himself.
No. I mean, he's heinous because he's shown that for his own personal safety and everything like that, he's willing to commit the most hellish activities. Like if someone said to me that you, Gopal, are going to be the cause of my death, I wouldn't kill you. I just wouldn't go in a car where you were driving.
Understood.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you say the eighth son is going to be the cause of your death, and you say, well, that's just Krishna's, that's what's supposed to happen, and no matter what I do, it's going to happen. So, but they were trying to, hate to use the word egg, Kamsa on to accelerate the appearance of Krishna. And it was Kamsa's fate to be killed by Vishnu. So anyway, yeah, you don't say it wasn't Kamsa's fault, because we all have free will, if we're threatened. in such a way, we have free will not to commit heinous activities just to protect ourselves. He made a choice.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was Krishna's pastime, but Kamsa was also a demon. You could say it's not his fault. You know, he's just taking part in Krishna. Just one of the actors. Yeah, all the... was it, everything's a stage and all the people upon it are actors. So all the world's a stage. Yeah, that's the quote. All the world's a stage. So you could say he was just one of the actors. You know, I blame him. He's just doing his part. But also, he's responsible. Like I said previously, that if someone kills someone, even though that person was meant to be killed, still the person who does the killing is responsible. Unless that person doing the killing is doing the killing under the jurisdiction of God. And I'm not saying that I'm in favor of religious wars. That's not the point. But I'm just talking about the battle of Kurukshetra. In the battle of Kurukshetra, it's not that Arjuna wasn't responsible for the killing because he's doing it under the direction of Krishna. So, alrighty. So, who else has a question? You can type or raise your hand, and I will call on you.
Buddha, please accept my humble obeisances.
Yes. So, Rakesh, what's up?
One person in the temple asked me, why do we do obeisances sideways instead of straight?
Instead of straight? Straight is okay. But it's just, depending on which side, like if you're supposed to have your left side to the deities and your left side to the spiritual master when you offer dandavas, but straight is okay too. The right side is usually, it's a ritual. The right side is reserved for demigods. So if you're worshiping the demigods, then you put your right side. But, you know, anyway, I'm not going to get into the details. You know, it's a tradition. Now, what is the reason for the tradition? I don't know. We do a lot of things that are traditional. And we do them because they're tradition. Let me talk about tradition. Tradition actually keeps a society together. That's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, family traditions. Like Arjuna, he gives a bona fide reason for not killing people. He says that, you know, we kill these soldiers, then the family traditions will be lost. You know, and the women won't be protected. He gives all these things, which is true. And family traditions, or societal traditions, or religious traditions, they keep a society together. You know, they have a certain style of dress, like that, and they help people with their identification with the society. I mean, just like in the 1960s, early 70s, you had the hippies. And they had traditional ways of dressing with their hair, with their clothes, so you can identify who was a hippie and who was not a hippie. So that, in one sense, that was a tradition. Of course, that tradition maybe is lost. Anyway, it's somewhere in the world today. So we have certain ways of doing things that may or may not be eternal facts. Eternal facts are things like, you're not the body, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you're part and parcel of Krishna. Maya is putting you in illusion so that you're succumbing to your anarthas. I mean, these are eternal factoids. But other things are useful to cement the members of society together. So I'm not going to give you a really philosophical reason for the right side and left side and everything like that. But these are traditions. Tradition. There's even a song about that. Tradition. Okay, Gopal, you have a question real quick.
Yes, Gurudev. You were speaking about traditions. There are certain traditions in certain societies that are quite heinous. We see especially today, like, yeah, you know, family or neighborhood barbecues, and even in the, yeah, Vedic society, animal sacrifices, which Krishna incarnated as Lord Buddha just to stop.
Yeah.
So
So
are there certain traditions that are out there that just the statement that it's tradition doesn't really defend it? It still should be a tradition that needs to die?
Yeah, there's traditions that need to die, but traditions are necessary to keep society and families together.
But not necessarily all traditions.
No, but not necessarily the good ones. In Nepal, they actually kill bulls or something like that on one particular day, or anyway, there's so many traditions on Mardi Gras, you know, Fat Tuesday or something like that, they all pick out. So, but traditions keep a society together, and we have our traditions, which maybe have some basis in philosophy, or they may be just innocuous. Okay, thank you. So, Brajalila, real quick.
I have two, but the first was just quick. Like, at our temple, we have all the women that put their right side to the deities when we offer up our obeisances, and I was wondering if we should switch that.
No, that's all right.
Okay, I don't know. I kind of understood. I don't know. Anyway, but the main question that I had was, I'm confused on how the people in Vrindavan know that Balaram and Krishna are brothers when they don't know that Vasudeva is their father.
How do they know they're brothers? Because they're cousin brothers. That's why they're considered brothers.
Because Nanda's taking care of Rohini?
Yeah, Nanda's taking care of Rohini. And they're cousins. I mean, you have to understand the Veda, the village culture is that even if someone's born in the same village, completely unrelated, they're sometimes considered brothers and sisters. So,
well, then the cowherd boys would be brothers in that way.
In that way, too. But Balaram, especially Balaram and Krishna, because they're of the same family. Because Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva were actually half brothers.
Oh, okay.
So in that way, they'd actually literally be considered family brothers or half-brothers.
Okay.
So that's why. Okay, so thank you very much, and we'll see everybody hopefully tomorrow if we're all alive. Hopefully we'll all be alive tomorrow. So all glorious to divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Whoops.